Insight is back today after a month-long hiatus. We are live in our Sacramento studio, and today happens to be Cap Radio's 40th birthday. So we'll do a bit of reminiscing. Do you remember the show that preceded Insight? I'm Beth Ruriak. Also ahead today, Politico's Carla Marinucci joins us to talk about Senator Kamala Harris's campaign stop in Sacramento yesterday. Polls say Harris is holding her place as a Democratic frontrunner in the 2020 presidential race. And we are sharing the hour this week with The Takeaway. So at 9:30, you'll hear a discussion about the state of Virginia's Democratic Party heading into legislative elections this year. I'm Beth Ruriak. Just ahead, The Takeaway and a bit of celebration of Cap Radio's 40th birthday. And then, of course, Insight. Live from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. That music by Claude Bowling was the theme for a Cap Radio program back in the 1980s. It was a show called Sacramento Spectrum. It preceded Insight, and we're going to talk about some of that station history today on this day, which is Cap Radio's 40th birthday. First of all, though, I'm your host, Beth Ruriak. I'm glad to be back with you today. And we have some political news about three high-profile California electeds to begin this hour. Kamala Harris, Adam Schiff, and Kevin McCarthy. On the phone with us is the award-winning political reporter Carla Marinucci, who is now Politico's California Playbook reporter. Carla, it's great to have you back on the program today.
Good morning, Beth. Good to be with you. And happy birthday to Cap Public Radio.
How about that? 40 years ago. Now, when you say 1979, that doesn't sound like so long ago, does it?
Yeah, no. Not to me, anyway.
Not to me either. Since we're talking about dates in the calendar, let's say that it is 11 months and a day until California's primary in 2020. And so I just think thinking about dates and knowing that Kamala Harris brought her campaign to Sacramento yesterday, we're about a year out. But how important was that visit to the Capitol?
Well, it was really important in that she was there before 600 labor leaders and, boy, a whole bunch of Democratic elected officials who wanted to be there and showing their support for her. You know, she's got a big lift right now in the sense that this is a crowded field. Money is really, really important. She came on a day when her campaign announced she had raised $12 million in the first quarter, with 98% of the contributions under $100. And so she was there in front of labor, California labor. That's a huge constituency for her. That's a hugely important group of supporters. And they just adored her last night. They were cheering her on. And this was a key event. She was here. She sandwiched that in between a bunch of fundraisers as well. So there's a lot of pressure on her to maintain that, top tier status in the Democratic field and to raise money, especially with some of these newcomers like Pete Buttigieg coming up on her and, you know, raising $7 million with no campaign apparatus whatsoever. So, the pressure is on her to stay out front in that field.
Carla, will you put Kamala Harris's fundraising in context? You know, to say someone raised $12 million or $7 million, what does that mean? Is that a big number at this point?
Yeah, that is a big number, especially since, I mean, she raised half of that online, and the average contribution, according to her campaign, was $28. So this is small dollar donors that are going to be important to her. At the same time, the same day yesterday, she was at the home of Angelo Sakopoulos, a very wealthy developer and the father of Eleni Kounalakis, the lieutenant governor, doing a big high donor fundraiser. So the fact is, they got to balance these things. The money is important, but as I said, we're watching some big numbers come up, and I think the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, Pete Buttigieg, who was just here in California, his raising $7 million when he was virtually unknown, and he governs a city of about 100,000. That was a pretty astonishing figure, too. Of course, the Kamala Harris figure is, $5 million bucks more. She's always been a good fundraiser, but the heat is on her to continue to be and to continue to produce those numbers. And her, I think her other big challenge, Beth, is that being in the top tier. Now her record comes up. Of the front runners. Her record now comes in for a lot of scrutiny. There's been a number of stories in the past couple of days on her record as a prosecutor. She is now getting a closer look on some of the proposals, including her tax cut for the middle class and her proposal to boost teacher salary. And she's going to have to answer those questions as well. So it's going to get tougher for Kamala Harris as new faces come into the picture and as the debates begin in June. So she's going to have to be ready for all that.
She talked about a proposal, a family tax credit, in her speech yesterday. Let's listen to a little bit about this idea.
What I am proposing is that for families who make less than $100,000 a year as a family, they will receive a $6,000 tax credit that they can receive at up to $500 a month. Economists are describing it as what would be the most significant middle class tax cut we have seen in this country in generations.
How much analysis has been done of this idea, Carla?
There has been some, and I think she actually did get praise, Beth, because we're looking at, you know, a lot of the Democratic hopefuls talking about dinging the rich, upping the taxes on the rich. Kamala Harris is talking about tax relief for the middle class. And what her proposal, which is called the LIFT middle class tax cut, would involve is essentially a tax credit, as she mentioned, up to $6,000 a year. Essentially a tax gift that's worth, you know, $3 trillion over 10 years. And she's talking about doling it out on a $500 a month basis, something that she said last night would maybe keep people from having to go to those payday lenders, help people pay their mortgages off. There's been some analysis of it. I think she's going to get a lot more questions about exactly how this is going to work, especially when, the price tag is big. But this is the kind of legislation, a refundable tax credit, that has really not been done. And I think she's one of the only ones in the field who is talking about this at this point. So I think there's going to be a lot of focus on this and a lot more, piecing it and figuring out how this works. Her target is the GOP tax law, and she said it last night.
Let me pause you there, Carla, because we're going to listen to more about that and how she says she would pay for this tax cut.
When people want to come to me asking, first of all, how are you going to pay for that tax credit for the families making less than $100,000 a year? I'll tell you. You ain't come up to me. How are you going to pay for it, right? You know how we're going to pay for it? On day one, we're going to repeal that tax bill that they passed, benefiting the top 1% and the biggest corporations in our country. That's how we're going to pay for it.
So she has this plan. And by the way, I think that was the biggest applause line in her speech, wasn't it, Carla?
That's right. She said, you know, those people don't need the money. Our people need the money. And it's true. She's talking about placing a fee on financial institutions and going after the law that basically benefited people making more than $100,000. It's a lot of the analysis says that is not going to be enough to cover the cost. So she's going to have to answer more questions on how to do that. But you're right. That is a very popular line with your grassroots Democratic voters.
Let me get through a few more quick points here. There are names that are polling ahead of hers in the race. Bernie Sanders right now, Beto O'Rourke, Joe Biden. But let's talk about Joe Biden, who isn't officially in the race, and some of the stories that are coming forward. These are Me Too stories. I don't know whether you put them in the category of an allegation or an accusation at this point. What's your take?
You know, to hear Nancy Pelosi defend Joe Biden and basically say she does not think that this is disqualifying, I think that was an important statement for Joe Biden. He has been getting jammed on this issue, and I think it is an issue that sort of reflects a generational divide here on this. Joe Biden, who's been in politics for 40 years, maybe 50 years, I think it reflects the kind of behavior that was never blinked at back when he first got into politics, and which politicians never had to apologize for. Pelosi made the point that it's not enough to say, I'm sorry if I offended you. You have to just say, I'm sorry and I won't do that again. And I think this is an example, Beth, of the kind of things Joe Biden, with a long record in politics, has a lot. There's a lot more targets on him than there are going to be on any other candidate in this race. He's going to have to answer for, you know, Anita Hill again and all kinds of legislation. And this is the problem. I talked to Senator Chris Coons not long ago, a very good friend of Joe Biden, who said that Biden was really sort of considering whether or not to get in because of the whole social media issue and how much attacks he'd get there. And that is exactly what's happening. So we're seeing kind of an unfolding. Whether, you know, a lot of people feel Joe Biden did not make these advances or these physical advances with any kind of bad intentions in mind. He's just a touchy-feely kind of guy. And that years ago, decades ago, was not questioned, and women didn't speak up if they were uncomfortable about it. Now they do, and he's got to acknowledge that.
Lucy Flores is the former Nevada assemblywoman who wrote, and this came to light on Friday, that when she was seeking office back in 2014 and Joe Biden was still vice president, he smelled her hair, he kissed her in an which was an unwanted kiss by her on the back of her head. It's I feel that if I don't say some of what's out there in the story, people might not know, and then your imagination wanders. So we are in an era where we have to be specific, Carla.
That's right. And I think, you know, the kind of thing you're describing, you know, doesn't rank in the, let's say, the kind of discussion that Donald Trump was having on Access Hollywood, right, where he's talking about grabbing women by their genitals. This is a whole different thing. It's a more sort of grandfatherly kind of approach. But at the same time, Pelosi said, if it makes women uncomfortable, you've got to acknowledge that. And you've got to say you're not going to do it again.
Carla, there's going to be a time when we don't call it grandfatherly. When it's just life and time and standards will have moved on, and it'll just be inappropriate or uncomfortable.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. He's a politician from another era, and you know, he's got to deal with this era, and that is his problem all the way around.
Okay, Congressman Adam Schiff from California is under attack. We don't have a lot of time, but I do want to play a response that he gave to Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. She asked him what he thinks we will eventually learn out of the Mueller report, whether every witness will ultimately be revealed.
I don't think he will give us a witness list. And again, this is obviously guesswork at this point. I think what we will have is a narrative about different parts of the investigation and who the players were. If there are people that they brought before the grand jury or interviewed who really didn't have something all that valuable to share. I don't think their name is going to appear just to have a comprehensive list. But I would imagine a 400-page report has exhibits far more than 400 pages. Whether one of those exhibits is a list of everyone they talked to, every search warrant they executed, every subpoena they issued, I suppose it's possible.
We have heard Adam Schiff joke about attacks from the president. Quick response, Carla. How's he handling this bipartisan congressional battle over him?
I think he's handling it very well, at least. I mean, he is a hero to Democratic grassroots right now, ever since he became the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. His speech, I guess, was last week before House Intelligence, in which he employed that meme, "You might think it's okay," talking about what he believed, allegations of corruption, collusion, et cetera, with Trump, repeated that phrase 21 times. That has become his call here. And at the same time, he's become a punching bag for the Republican Party and President Trump. They're, you know, calling him pencil neck Adam Schiff. They're selling T-shirts based on that.
Carla,
the bottom line.
Go ahead. Bottom line, I have 5 seconds.
He's going to be right front and center, Beth, from now until probably next election.
always happy to have you on the program. A lot of people followed your work in the San Francisco Chronicle. Glad to have you here from Politico. Thanks, Carla.
Always good to be with you. Thanks.
That is Carla Marinucci. The political junkie Ken Rudin will be with us next week, and you are listening to Insight Live on CAP Radio. You're listening live to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. And that's the theme music again from the show that preceded Insight on the station back in the 1980s. We are back. We're happily back from hiatus today, though you're going to notice that we're still in abbreviated shows this week. We'll be sharing the hour this week with The Takeaway. 40 years ago, April 2nd, 1979, CAP Radio went on the air. Here is the beginning of that very first broadcast.
This is KXPR Sacramento, now beginning its broadcast day.
And that was it. Mark Jones joined the station a few months after that first day. He has produced and or engineered every community-oriented show that preceded Insight. Actually, he is the one who is the mystery tweet picture. The picture then and now, which you can see on our website. Usually he's guiding us from Master Control. I know this isn't the easiest transition, but we've made you a guest today, Mark. Welcome.
Thank you. You look much closer up on this side of the room.
On the other side of the glass. Happy shared birthday to Capital Public Radio. So who was that first voice we heard?
That, I believe, and of course I wasn't here because I came 5 months later, was Matt Meany, who was the engineer.
Let's go through a little bit of history. CAP Radio was KXPR at that point, came out of the student-run radio station at Sacramento State. That's why we're hearing the address being 6000 J Street.
Yes, and was actually in the theater building at that time, which was the space that had been KERS's space.
Give me some of the atmosphere around the station coming on the air. What was the spirit in the months when you got here?
When I got here, it was still very new. Everybody was running full bore to try and get the best program that they could. It was mostly classical music at the time. You know, 70% of it was classical music. And we just wanted to do the best show we could. But there were so few people. And it was just the one station. It was only on 20 hours a day. And that's why you would hear that sign on every morning, not that particular one, but every morning you would hear the sign on, and then at two in the morning when it signed off, you would hear a sign off with all that information again.
So we have a longer version of that first little bit on the air, and you're actually going to hear the first classical announcer. So this was put together for us by our music director, our current music director, Paul Conley. Let's take a listen.
This is KXPR Sacramento, now beginning its broadcast day. KXPR is owned by the trustees of the California State University.
Hallelujah! 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 Hallelujah!
Good morning and welcome to our first Eclecticos. Music for this morning, Monday, April 2nd. Music from Handel's Messiah. The Hallelujah Chorus starting things off for us here on a happy morning as we present a celebration of classical music for you here on KXPR. Listener-supported public radio from the campus of California State University, KXPR Sacramento, located at 88.9 on your FM dial. We hope that you'll stay with us for a morning celebration of classical music. Music next by one of the greatest of classical composers, Franz Joseph Haydn, and his Miracle Symphony, the Symphony No. 96.
So that was the very first broadcast, April 2nd, 1979. And who was that, Mark?
That was Sharon Bennett, we believe, the classical music director who was programming most of the station's music at that time. There was a jazz music director, Dave Roth, I believe.
You're listening to Mark Jones, who guides us as technical director for Insight. How many hats have you worn here at the station? Because you've been an announcer and a host and a producer as well.
Yeah, pretty much everything. I haven't done sales, and I've never been the general manager. but pretty much everything else.
So you're almost at 40 years.
Almost.
Being here in a couple months, it will be.
5 months.
Do you recall the vision then, how far ahead into the future people were looking with the station going on the air?
I don't think they were looking at the future at that time. They were so engrossed in the present and trying to do just everything that we could do, you know, getting a station on longer, which eventually came, you know, into a 24-hour station, and then building the second station. But, you know, back then, it was sometimes a struggle just to stay on during the Christmas break when the university would shut down all power to that building for 2 weeks because the students were gone. They wanted to save money. But we were still there, so we didn't have to go down to the rental store and buy or rent all these cables, long, big cables that would go all the way to the next building so that we could stay powered up with just the equipment we needed to stay on the air for those 2 weeks.
Sacramento State holds the license, and KXPR and KXJZ have switched frequencies over the years. And then NPR came in after it was looking for locations for an affiliate. So some of the history that started back then continues today.
It does. And actually, All Things Considered was one of the original programs on the station.
Oh, was it?
It came in on the phone line, though, so we didn't hear all the theme music. And the first time we switched to the satellite, and we were the first satellite downlink for radio in this town. The first time we heard that music, we go, whoa, we didn't know that was part of the show. It had always been there, but we never heard it because of the phone line.
Music was always important, and it's fun to listen to that Claude Bowling piece.
Yes.
So did you work on Sacramento Spectrum, too?
I did.
Of course.
I was one of the original producers of that show. And that was a weekly show, and it was kind of done in the off hours. We couldn't do a live daily show until we had a studio that could really support it. And so when we moved into this building 15 years ago, we were finally able to do that.
How about some perspective on the growth and change over the years? And I mentioned Paul Connolly's name. He's another person who's been here for a very long time. Yep. Gary Vercelli has been here a long time.
Absolutely. Yeah, Gary came just a year after I did. And now with seven stations, you know, four of them on the news and three in the music, we are still growing, which is really amazing at this point when there are so many challenges in media in general that we are actually still growing, and just had a very successful fund drive on the music station. We'll have one coming up on the news station soon. And the people make it happen. I think that's partly because we were one of the last major metropolitan areas to get a public radio station like this. And people were primed and ready, and they knew what public radio could be, and they wanted it to happen here. And we did.
Well, I hope you're with us for a lot more
I don't know
time.
If it'll be 40 years.
Many
we'll
more
see.
Years. Thank you, Mark. We'll have birthday cake at noon. And again, don't miss those photos of Mark Jones then and now on the website. Happy 40th birthday to Capital Public Radio. That's Insight for today. We'll be back tomorrow with another abbreviated show. And now we return you to the takeaway already in progress.